Hey, friends.
Hey.
Hey, welcome back to the show.
Yep. Always nice to check in twice a week with you.
Indeed. And we've got a little bit of a different episode today for you because earlier this month, we got to go to Podcast Movement 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a convention for podcasters and podcast enthusiasts and entrepreneurs who are coming up with new ways to break into this relatively new medium. It really is. Podcasting is still brand spanking new, honestly, when you look at it. There's a lot that hasn't been established yet. There's a lot to learn. And we had a lot to learn. And that was really cool. We were invited up by iHeartRadio and our friends and producers, Ben and Noel, took us up there. And we just had a really amazing time.
Yeah, it was really cool. We stayed at the Gaylord Opryland, which if you get a chance to go, I would check it out. It
was
very much I think you called it a human terrarium, which isn't good.
Yeah.
It's like a full greenhouse in there and a full water park in there and a bunch of stores.
Yeah, indoor
and
water
restaurants.
Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a huge and just an enormous place.
Yeah.
And in Nashville. Did we say it was in Nashville?
It's in Nashville, yeah. A massive structure. I mean, easy to get lost in.
Mm-hmm.
And we, we're in a pandemic. And mm-hmm. when we were invited, we were very excited. It would think things were a little better when we actually talked about going. And once we're getting closer to, the end of July, beginning of August, things were starting to look a little creepy with the Delta variant coming up. And we walked in and checked in and they give us our room key and a map and they say, okay, walk down this hallway, go up these elevators, walk over there. And they circle right where our room is, like the section of the convention center where our hotel room is. And we look down at the map and it says Delta Island. The name of that wing was the Delta Wing. And so everywhere we go, there's big signs saying like, welcome to Delta, or like, come get your Delta. Like, it was just everywhere. We're like, this is a bad sign.
Can we leave?
but we were fine.
We're fine. We
did got
not
in
catch
and out of
Delta.
There. We got tested when we got home.
Mm-hmm.
We played it safe. We stayed low.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't go get in any other crowded spaces for 10 days or so.
Right.
Yeah.
And we got to meet a bunch of people that work at iHeart that we've gotten to email with maybe, but haven't got to meet in person.
Yeah.
So that was really, really awesome. And
very
they're
exciting.
So fun. And we just had a blast. And Nashville's really fun. So definitely want to go back there another time.
Right.
But one of the highlights, of course, was getting to sit on a panel with Ben and Noel from Ridiculous History. Our big sister podcast, Ridiculous History.
Hosted by our big sisters, Ben and Noel.
Yes. They're great sisters. They lend us outfits all the time.
Yes.
It was
all about music.
Oh, my God.
They taught us how to read. I had big sisters, and that's what it was. So.
Well, I did not, so.
Man.
But my big brother taught me multiplication.
I mean, look, a big brother's great, but get yourself, get yourself a couple big sisters, and you're gonna turn out fine.
But
get a little sister, too, and that helped as well, so.
Well, I was the little sister, so you're welcome to others.
You're welcome, David.
You're welcome, David. He's like, for what? Anyway.
He's not listening.
He's not listening. Anyway. So, the highlight was definitely sitting on this panel. It was called The Humor and the Heavy. And we kind of talked about how both of our shows have to often dive into tragic or upsetting or just heavy periods of history to find something kind of crazy that happened in that period of time to share with y'all. And how do you find that kind of humor in those jokes without disrespecting your topic or your subject or, the real shit that people were going through during that time? So, it was a really cool experience to get to talk about comedy and how that works, kind of.
It was awesome. I mean, just getting... sitting down, I think we were a little nervous about it.
We're fairly
new to podcasting. So at first, I think we were like, well, what the hell do we have to say?
I definitely was like,
But we have a lot of experience in comedy. I mean, we've both been doing comedy as adults, together for 15 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of cool once we got rolling and especially once people started asking us questions and we had to think on our feet and really dive into the methodology of how this podcast and how comedy in these kind of situations works. I don't know. I felt like I was even teaching myself as we talked about it, just sort of having revelations like, oh, I guess that is how we do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know how to put this to words. I would think if we did the same thing next year, hopefully we'd be even better at it. But it was really exciting. I'm excited to bring it to you guys today. It's great to be up there with Ben and Noel.
Yeah, and also the moderator is our friend Lauren Vogelbaum, who's also a very good, an amazing podcast host with several shows of her own.
Yeah.
She did a great job moderating with us. So it was really just a really fun pile of folks on stage. So
Lauren's
a good time.
Awesome. We spent a lot of time that week with Lauren and just had such a good time. You got to check out her show, Savor. I know is one
American
of my favorites.
Shadows.
American Shadows. She's awesome. And she did a great job moderating and giving us really good questions.
So yeah, check it out. Hope you enjoy.
Let's go.
Hey there, friends. Come listen well. Eli and Diana got some stories to tell. There's no matchmaking or romantic tips. It's just about ridiculous relationships. A lover might be any type of person at all. An abstract concept. Or a concrete wall. But if there's a story worth a second glance, we'll put it in our show, Ridiculous Romance.
A production of iHeartRadio.
Before we get started, thank you so much for coming to this panel today. Is everybody having a good time at Podcast Movement so far?
Has everyone gotten lost like in the Jurassic Park atrium at least once?
Yes.
Cool. Twice. Three times. A lost. Yeah.
Is anybody
person.
Here actually lost now? Because if so, I will give directions.
Yeah.
He's great at that.
Yeah.
The panel that you are supposed to be in is called The Humor and the Heavy. Explore serious subjects with finesse and empathy.
Wow. That sounds
Ooh.
Like a fun panel.
Yeah. See?
Oh, I'm in the wrong place.
I know.
Please stay. You're our ringer.
All right.
We need you.
So, hi, I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. I am your friendly neighborhood moderator. The panel that we are in is the thing that I just said. Here with me on the stage today, we have Ben Bolin, Noel Brown, Eli Banks, and Diana Brown. No relation that I know of.
Not that
oh,
I
us,
know of.
No.
Cool.
We're friends.
That would be
it's
a
relation.
Surprise.
They are the hosts of Ridiculous History and Ridiculous Romance, which are two podcasts. It's part of it. It's part of a whole ridiculous slate now mm-hmm. at mm-hmm. iHeart.
We call it the RCU.
No. RCE.
RCE, yes.
Extended.
Extended. Yeah.
Extended.
Yes.
Well, good. And these two shows explore, try to take bits of history that are honestly ridiculous and explore the why and how of what went down. And frequently it's very funny, and frequently it's incredibly tragic, often at the same time. And so what they wanted to talk about today is just their insight into how they handle that carefully and with human empathy, but also keeping it light and funny, entertaining. I have some questions.
Love
okay.
that.
All right, here
Ooh.
We go. Okay.
Way into
Fairly.
It.
I'll allow it.
So y'all do often take a humorous approach, but you have to acknowledge those serious, uncomfortable realities that are part of the stories that you're telling. How would you all describe the process for how you handle that on air?
So I guess I would kick us off by saying one of the first things to think about is it's almost cliche, but in our opinion, when Noel and I first started Ridiculous History, we decided from day one that the most important part of any show we ever do, episode or podcast entire, is going to be the audience. And so, you know, dumb puns are there aplenty,
sure.
you know,
yeah.
and bits and riffing, but ultimately we want to serve the story and the audience by telling the truth even when it might feel uncomfortable. And a lot of, honestly, when you think about it, a lot of comedy exists in this sort of liminal space between what makes us laugh and what makes us uncomfortable. Laughter itself is often a reaction to things that people would rather not acknowledge.
Right, it's kind of funny, actually. One thing you learn being a podcaster is you can't make everybody happy. So oftentimes we will hedge a little bit or talk about how a practice of a certain era perhaps is problematic and wouldn't fly today. And we literally get kind of dunked on sometimes for like trying to do that too hard maybe. But I think we do it just hard enough, and it's important to us to acknowledge the present and, you know, the norms and what's okay now and why this. I mean, I'm trying to think of a good example. Even like in the history of underwear, for example, like how it's so based on this like weird patriarchal kind of idea of beauty and like fashion. And it was very like the opposite of empowering for women. And then it kind of, you know, progressed from there and became like, you know, Calvin Klein underwear models and all that.
Oh, and reading historically accurate quotations.
Always fun.
Because people were, you know, way less diplomatic at times.
How about y'all? I know it's something... One thing that's interesting and different between our shows is we set a cutoff historically.
Very arbitrary.
Well, it wasn't entirely arbitrarily. It was based around apartheid. We had an episode about like a really plucky gorilla in the Johannesburg Zoo that like chased down a criminal. And that was the focus of the story. But this is a great example, too. It was all surrounded by apartheid, which is obviously a historical event that is super tragic, its own form of genocide, you could argue, in some ways, but like we decide, okay, this is a recent enough historical event, and we really can't go much further back than this. So we set our cutoff mid-1990s. But y'all, you don't really have that cutoff. I think it's great because history is obviously being written every day. But with some of the more modern stuff that you guys do, how do you approach it? You know, in terms of keeping it light, while talking about like heroin addicts that are murdering each other, like Sid and Nancy, for example.
That's true, and that's sort of. You know, we've been leaning more historical because it's nice to have at least the full story of these people's lives when we're talking about a romance. You know, we want to see the context of where they met and kind of the whole story of how it ended. But we do get into some more modern stories while trying to dodge tabloidy stuff. You know, we've done a couple celebrities. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, we're really steering clear of like a Hollywood insider-y news, you know, like tabloidy. Exploitative kind of feeling of if it's just like, ew, look at these two weirdo, like it's kind of, it feels bad. You know what I mean?
There's got to be a richness to it. Like, you know, we're not just going to peer inside people's current lives, you know, and pick them apart and tell that story. We want some sort of richness out of it. Like when we, for example, did the Robert Downey Jr. and his wife story, that was what we were really talking about is addiction.
Yeah.
And how difficult that is. And we kind of used that fairly modern sort of tabloidy kind of story to examine something, I think, a little deeper than that, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you guys do a great job at that.
Yeah, they're better than us, actually.
It's true. So.
Eli and Diana, you're talking about these relationships from the past. Are there any examples that you have for us of ones that are clearly misunderstood by people in these our modern times?
Well, I'll start with one I think is really interesting we just did recently that's this story has really opened up only in the last couple of years, and that was Winston and Clementine Churchill. And that was full of challenges because Winston Churchill is a super complicated character. He did a lot of really great things and a lot of really horrible things. And but only in recent years, a biography came out in 2015 where this author, you know, went through all their personal letters and just found out that she was hugely instrumental in his rise to success and ultimately defeating the Nazis, which was great. And
A guy took credit for something a woman actually did?
Yeah, I know.
No way.
You know, weirdly,
weird,
we've
right?
been
never
seeing
happens.
That over and over again.
It never happens, but this time it happens. Weird.
So that was one where, you know, the idea of Clementine Churchill for so long was that she was very quiet and kind of just like stood by her man. And
I've never heard of her. I'm not joking. I mean, I didn't see the movie, but I've not heard of Clementine Churchill.
Yeah, I knew
this exact moment.
Yeah,
I'm ashamed
to say. We knew very little before we started researching, and kind of learning that romance was something I don't think people are only beginning to understand it. So that was something that, you know, we were happy to bring out to people. But then Aja Ritta?
Yeah, definitely. Our second episode was about a woman who married the Berlin Wall. And so we ended up like going
into... I'm sorry,
into,
what? Married?
She married
the Berlin Wall.
The Berlin Wall.
Okay, just making sure I heard you.
And so, just throwing that out there. We ended up getting really into objectum sexuality, and we started talking about animism and all kinds of like... Just, it went into a lot of different kind of rabbit holes, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
But it was something very misunderstood about them because they as you got more and more into how they feel about it and how they express it and how it's happening for them and in real time and it was really kind of profound and it was powerful and I was like, I feel this romance happening even though I can't enter in, I can't enter into that at all myself, but I was like, I have a little tear in my eye. I would watch this Pixar movie. I would. I mean, you know, like, and
who would play the wall? Who would be the voice of the wall?
I mean,
can we go Tom Waits?
Christoph Waltz, perhaps?
Christoph Waltz.
He is the go-to German actor,
Herzog.
Right?
Herzog?
Ooh.
Herzog.
Oh, Herzog.
Herzog.
Herzog. I don't know if he'd
gravitas.
Do it.
Yeah. He's tough
I
to
am
love.
Lonely. Please love me. Yes. I would watch the movie.
Well, I was really glad we did that episode first or early because I think we approached it because it sounded funny. And that as we dug into it, I think we really like just found a lot of empathy for these people and understanding. And it really sort of set, I think, us in a direction on the show that was like, we need to come at every subject with a hugely open mind. And sometimes, you know, your mind is open and you learn something incredible and you have a whole new appreciation. And sometimes you get like Sid and Nancy. I didn't know anything about them. I was like, I'm really open to learn more of these people. And I was injured. That was a very, like, very yeah. dark story. That was hard to...
But
oh, yeah.
But
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's how you do the line of humor and heavy is sort of remembering that history is very human. Everyone you're looking at is human. And even if they're 1,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, 10 years ago, we all have things that are, I mean, instincts that are just real. And if you can tap into that, you can take anything with respect and you can tell that mm-hmm. story with respect and still have a lot of fun with it without like punching down.
I got it. Tilda Swinton as the wall.
Oh my God, of course.
Right? Where
Swinton
were we?
Is the wall
She's
and
so
also
versatile.
Ajuritza.
She can just play anything.
That would work.
Yes.
She might be one of us right now.
She can do anything.
I don't know. She's amazing.
Yes, this is, all of us are Tilda Swinton. Speaking of those human moments that are so important, how do you find those in all of the stories that you pursue?
I think that's a question that applies to any podcast. I'd like to poll us in the audience because we are recording this live. This will be on our show later, so you are already part of the show now. And I think we have a lot of people at the movement today who are themselves podcasters, right? And you run into those moments where you say, why am I telling this story? How do I convey this story differently? You know, what is the difference between someone just reading a timeline that says so-and-so was born in 1819, and then in 1834, you know, they invented round
corn.
What?
Corn. Corn was an invention.
Corn.
Yeah.
They invented round corn or something like that. And then you go through a timeline, you kind of lose the soul of it. Like Diana said, life is one big game of telephone and long form improv. No one's really sure how it's gonna end. You know, you just try to sort of yes and your way through it. And what you find is that if you really look at these people, not as epic, you know, entries in a history textbook, what you find is that they too are rarely convinced that they are doing the right thing. They have quarrels,
right?
You know?
Well, it's interesting too. It all depends on the source, right? Like, you know, as you say, history is written by the winners and all of that. So it certainly can have a spin to it and a slant to it. And I think the key too is reading from lots of different sources, lots of different perspectives, and also having our own perspective. Because there was a really great talk earlier with Charlemagne and Jill Scott and our boss Connell.
And Dolly.
And Dolly, of course. And I think what something Charlemagne said that was totally correct is that podcasts are all about personality. I think that's sort of like a duh kind of statement, but it's about perspective. You know, it's like anybody can tell the same story, but it's not going to be the same story. It's all about who's telling it and how it's being told. And not to say that facts are going to change, but it's about the empathy and the humanness that you bring to it as an individual human person with a perspective. And that's how you connect, you know, with your audience, I think.
Which is something I think Eli and Diana do really well.
Agreed.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You guys are totally humans. Well, I love that about you.
Honestly, we have it a little easier than you guys because our subject matter is literally romance. So there is a very human element like built into every episode. Even when it's not a romance like the John and Lorena Bobbitt story, you know, that there's still a human element.
It's a romance
there.
Of a kind.
It is, right?
And
in the beginning.
And
yeah.
When they met, there was a very brief, beautiful moment where they were just totally enamored with each other and, you know, went downhill from there.
It was a very brief year.
Rolled downhill into a bush.
Yeah. Behind a 7-Eleven, yeah.
They had to pick it up, put it in a box.
Cut short. Who said that? That was great.
Very good. This is the kind of stuff you can expect on episodes of Ridiculous History and Ridiculous Romance. But no, I think, yeah, again, it's just, it's kind of what you bring to the table. And I agree that you guys do a really, really great job of kind of like humanizing and just being empathetic and just like approaching things with kindness, you know, and right. not punching down. There's right. so many podcasts that are very inherently negative or mean-spirited, and I like some of those a lot, right. but that's not what we do. We try to bring sort of a kindness yeah. and a thoughtfulness, but also lightheartedness to some heavy topics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have there been any figures who you've started looking into and you start realizing that they've just been completely misportrayed?
Hitler. No, I'm kidding. They got him right.
No, they totally nailed that one. Yeah, yeah, really, that's did. Largely accurate. Yeah, what a great question, because there are the distressing / inspiring answer. You can decide whether this glass for you is half full or half mm-hmm. empty, to be super cliche about it, is that a majority, a surprising and disturbingly sizable proportion of people, of figures throughout history, are in some way misportrayed. And they're misportrayed often because the way that they are taught to students. You know, if you're not in grad school for James Joyce, you're probably not going to hear all the weird stuff James Joyce did. I mean, I'm going to keep it kind of family friendly, but James Joyce was like not a beloved figure in his, you know, his version of Cheers, his bars that he would hit up when he wasn't agonizing over Finnegan's Wake or something, because he would do stuff where he had, this is true, he had a tiny pair of women's, we did the underwear episode. Mm-hmm. We should have mentioned this.
I don't remember that story. Yeah, I'm on the edge of my seat.
It didn't make it in. But he had a tiny pair of women's underwear that he would fit around his pointer and his middle finger.
Like finger skateboard?
Yeah, like fingers, exactly.
Yeah.
And,
oh, it's awesome.
And so he was like, people were, when they saw him, they were instantly tired.
Kind of?
Yeah, he would like
that's
walk
amazing.
Up, he wouldn't know them, and he would be like, oh, and people don't want to really know that about the guy who changed Western literature.
Oh, I think it changed. I love it. I think it makes all the difference.
I'm very happy to know that about mm-hmm. the guy who changed Western literature.
But that's a human moment.
A million percent.
Right?
No, a million, especially with a work as heavy and puzzled over as like some of his stuff is, you know, this like literal puzzle box of a novel.
I guess he worked hard and partied hard.
He was just kind of a weird dude. Yeah, I love that.
Worked weird and partied.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say our biggest in that category is probably the Empress Elagabalus.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
She was a transgender empress of Rome. And we know that because the documents of the time about her said, call me the empress, call me his wife. That is what I want to be referred to as. And then for 1800 years, most of the documents said he.
Right.
When they were talking about her. And so that, you know, we... Of course, that's a lot more modern discourse that we're able to kind of learn and examine that, but I think it's something that is starting to change and has been misrepresented through history, but we're, you know, we can obviously look at it a different way now.
But especially with things like ancient Rome, where, again, the history is written by the winners,
right.
you have perspectives where it could be like very belittling to
right.
someone like that.
Right.
And you'll see certain historians that clearly have a slant and had an issue right. with this person.
Yes, that was something that really came clear researching that episode, because it was like, okay, well, at the time they wrote this, but it could have been a jab. They were trying to make him look bad or something, or... They erased from history people that they were just like, actually, that's your punishment. We're just going to just scratch you out the record for a minute, like mm-hmm. for 4 to 10 to however many years.
Yep.
And then you have to go back and kind of be like, okay, so this could be hearsay. It could be gossip. It could be a story somebody told somebody else because they wanted to look cool. You know, like
totally.
You're not sure. And that's kind of interesting, too, to see that pettiness. If you know,
right.
we
earliest
be petty
form of a subtweet,
through history.
You know, like, yeah.
Yeah, we've people never
would,
stopped
yeah,
the shade.
Never not started.
And because it's, you know, at least according to the records we do have, because she was a terrible person, you
right,
know, like
yeah.
murdered a lot of people. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's hard to walk that one back.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But I think, you know, one thing we could take away from that question is something that applies to us today, which is often the way history is taught trends toward telling us one thing about a person.
Yes.
And it may be the most important thing they've
right.
ever done.
Right.
And it may have fundamentally, you know, changed our experience living today, but that wasn't the only thing they did. Like the current Dalai Lama, true story, super into watches. He like collects watches. He's all about it. And he doesn't, I guess, really talk about it.
He like swatches. Another, remember swatches?
I think he's like, I do, and it would be super cool.
They were like the Keds of watches, yeah. kind
but,
of.
But everybody, like you're here today, and thank you for being here. And you right now are the version of you that has gone to a meetup about podcasts. But you're also someone's kid. Mm-hmm. You may have children of your own. You right. probably have like a high school friend that thinks of you as a totally different version of you. Mm-hmm. And people throughout history have that too. Well, maybe not the high school thing, but you know, you get it.
So much of history, especially like armchair, like pop history is inherently reductive. It kind of has to be.
Yeah, right.
It's really impossible or you know, unless you're Malcolm Gladwell or whoever that guy is that does the 5-hour history podcast.
Carlin.
Carlin, yeah. I can't.
Dan,
I
not
can't
George.
Hang with that. I can't do it.
No, he's good.
No,
really
I'm sure
good.
It's great. I'm sure it's for somebody, but it's not for me. And I'm okay with that.
Oh, boy.
But I think you can handle the short form versions still with respect and not being so reductive mm-hmm. that you're, you know, creating a super one-dimensional picture of one of these figures,
yeah,
you know?
Right. And this is something I want to shout out with that I love that you all do on Ridiculous Romance. You do what I think good storytellers should do, which is you embrace those tangents. You know, like when people used to talk about Nikola Tesla, right? And they would say, you know, they would have like the 5 to 6 talking points, and then somebody did the research and said, oh, actually, he got real deep with this pigeon toward the end of his life, mm-hmm. And it was, like, weirdly wholesome, and then that became one of those points. And I also, you know, Lauren Vogelbaum, moderating today, has a show that she does, one of her many shows called Savor, which is ostensibly about food. And catch me if I'm misspeaking here, but it's never...
It's about food.
Okay. Well, it's never just about food, I feel like, because it goes into culture, it goes into folklore, it goes into the sociology of the thing. And if you really want to understand a person, an event, a concept, then like Noel said, you need to look at all the differing, disagreeing sources, and then you need to look at all the things around it, because context is crucial to the plot.
Yeah.
Thank you for the shout out. I want to go back to, this is partially what you guys are talking about sensitivity, but also partially what y'all were talking about wanting to avoid being exploitative? Which is the word? Does anyone here know?
Dealer's choice.
Great.
Yeah. You're the moderator.
Oh, I was an English major. about trying not to be that thing. But still, like you guys do funny podcasts, like funny is part of the shtick. So like, how do you kind of have fun without making fun?
Ooh, I like what Diana said, punching down. That's huge.
I mean, that's a huge rule in comedy in general, is that, you know, how much power is in the equation, that's who you make fun of, is the one who has all the power in the situation, and the people who don't, you don't make fun of them. They got enough to deal with.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely, what's that word? You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Boom.
Thank
got
you.
Got an expert.
You found it.
Please. Well, I was just going to say, it's, you know, we, like our show, we're a married, white, cis, heteronormative couple. Like, there's a lot of down to punch, and it's, mm-hmm. but it's also not difficult to find completely different things to laugh about. Like, we talked about the Lonely Hearts Killers.
Yeah.
Right? These are two people who met in a catalog in the 50s, I think, 40s.
Yeah, newspaper ads in the 50s.
And then got together and murdered a bunch of people, and there's not a lot funny about that. I don't know what we did. Now, I shouldn't even brought it up because I can't remember what we did find funny about that. But.
That's the thing, though. You don't have to make it into a joke or make it into a bit.
Right.
It's, again, like I was saying, it's all about your perspective and the humanness with which you approach something heavy. Mm-hmm. You're not going to tell a doom and gloom, I call it misery porn story.
Yes.
You're going to find something to just themselves around it, and yeah. that's really the key.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
you don't have to convert it into some kind of like stand-up routine. Right. That's not what we do at all.
Yeah,
right?
We make and fun of ourselves mostly.
100%. Exactly.
Sure.
And we earned every bit
of
it.
Or the circumstances they're in. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. that era was there was so much ridiculousness happening around the circumstances that led to their relationship, that led to what they were mm-hmm. doing to other people in their lives who, you know, allowed them to behave like this. Or it's just absurd, and you can kind of laugh at that, I think.
Or the joke is also can be what my reaction to this, or how I would have reacted and how differently this person did. You know what I
100%.
Mean? That's the joke, right. becomes yep. like, if it were me, I would have sold him off the, you know, like, it would
well
have been
said,
a totally
yeah.
different, and then you have a good time, and then you're like, let me get back to the story, which is very tragic, and we're getting back to the story now. You know
and
what I mean?
I think
mean?
That's
like,
an important way to connect with your audience, too,
yeah.
is because they're thinking that themselves,
yeah.
and then you're acting as a stand-in for them
mm-hmm.
as well, and
yeah.
kind of inserting yourself into the narrative, and I think that's something that we've learned, and we get the most outreach about is like, I just like hanging out and like, you know, you guys ask
yeah.
the questions that occur to me as they yes. occur to me.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's a real, you know, it's sort of intuitive, but it is something you learn to kind of lean into over
yeah.
time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so great. Yeah, what would you do in that situation? That's why people watch horror films, right? Because there's something to knowing your own perspective on there and saying like, yeah, don't go in the cabin. You know, and you're looking around at other people
cabin.
In the theater,
yeah.
and they're like, please stop talking. You're like, but, yeah, I think that's a huge point that I love to hear in podcasts or just in conversation, because really you're exercising empathy by assuming that perspective.
And also just the last thing is like, we are trying to have you walk away with having learned a thing,
right.
a little bit at least, you know,
right.
something that you can remember, and whether you've learned from the experiences of others historically, or it's just a little, you know, thing you can bring up at parties and tell a weird story about, you know, the married couple that went on a killing spree. That's good party fodder. But,
sure.
you know, I'm just saying, like, that's a big part of it, too, is we want to make sure people are walking away, having learned something, having been entertained, and having felt some kind of connection, I guess.
Right.
So as you're talking through some of these subjects that do get into deep, weird places, has there ever been a moment where you felt like ethically or morally obligated to tell a particular part of the story or to tell a particular part of it a particular way?
Yes. Yeah, you can't do a heartwarming story about a gorilla in South Africa in the 1990s and not talk about apartheid.
That's right. That was a big deal for us.
You cannot not do that.
That was sort of the wake-up moment for us. We were like, oh, we kind of have to figure out how to do the thing that we're talking about today. Because that was relatively early on in the show's life.
Yeah.
And that's when we realized we had to talk about the surrounding circumstances of this ultimately heartwarming story to make the heartwarming bit pay off. You had to explain the, like, tragedy surrounding this whole thing. This gorilla, just by the way, became this rallying
yes.
figure, kind of, around which people just kind of like, almost this revolutionary figure, you know, during apartheid when all of this horrible stuff was happening.
Or if you like talk about silly things that in retrospect seem silly from earlier eras of humanity, you know, you talk about what's like one of those old saws, like the origin of the song Ring Around the Rosie. You know what I mean?
Right.
That gets dark pretty quick.
Totally.
And it's kind of irresponsible, or at the very least, it's somewhat unethical or misleading if you are telling that story and you're not also saying, this might seem cutesy now, but here's why it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because people in the past were not unintelligent. They were working with what they had, you know? And you talk about, like, there's a fantastic podcast called Sawbones,
mm-hmm.
right? Which talks about what we would call medical quackery,
yeah.
right? And what really that is it's not a bunch of people waking up and going, you know what, I'm gonna get real weird with it today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just gonna, like, I'm gonna, like, prescribe walking Wittershins
mm-hmm.
around an occluded moon
mm-hmm.
and then slapping people with beats.
Mm-hmm.
That came from somewhere, you know? Like, people were thinking through a process the best they could.
Right.
And that's the empathy we have to have. They did not have the advantages that people living now have.
Right, no, for sure.
Yeah. I'm kind of thinking of two, or three, actually, because you know, you guys mentioned apartheid, and we did the story about Seretse Khama and Ruth Williams, and that was an interracial couple. They married in what was Bechuanaland at the time, later became Botswana, largely because of their marriage, and apartheid, you know, forced them, even though it was happening in another place in South Africa, their influence on England and trade deals and everything got England to force them into exile out of their own country. Similarly, we had to kind of address apartheid in that episode. That ended up being a really important contextual part of their story.
Sure.
Other times it's less contextual, but we did the story of Bert and Linda Pugash, who, it's an insane story. It's our next episode to come out. And this guy hired some thugs to attack this woman who didn't want to date him anymore, and they threw acid in her face and blinded her. And when he got out of prison 12 years later, they got married.
Yeah.
And were happily married for the rest of their life. And
yeah.
It's a whole story. Great. But wow. Within that, he was in Attica prison during the Attica prison riots. And was only very tangentially involved. And I didn't know a lot about the Attica prison riots when I was doing the research. And I learned about them and said, it's insane that I haven't ever heard of this.
Did you watch Dog Day Afternoon as part of your research?
Well, we need to, because we're going to do that couple,
you
too.
Should.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
Yeah, we got that on the list.
But that was where it wasn't necessarily contextual to the story, but I was like, I can't not take this opportunity to make people aware of this thing.
Right.
So it almost turned into a 10-part series just about that. But we had to
minimize
it.
Yeah, for sure.
But couldn't walk away without bringing it up. It just seemed too important.
Yeah. I think when we did the 16th century poets, Shah Hussein and Madhu Lal, that was definitely one where I was like, okay, it feels important to explain not only the sect of religion that he was practicing, not only that area's feelings currently about gay marriage or gay relationships, and also all the political like stuff with Kashmir and the line of control and all this stuff, because their relationship was a Hindu and a Muslim living in harmony. So their relationship is still considered like a symbol of universal harmony for them and true like spiritual connection. And so some of them are like, they were just spiritual. They were not lovers. It was not gay, you know, whatever. And then a lot of people are like, I think they were gay. They had a loving gay relationship, you know, whatever. So it was really interesting to dive into that and feel it really felt important to have all that context around their relationship, because otherwise it wasn't as powerful. You didn't see the impact. Why we chose it, you know, it was like this has a lot, you know. It was deep, so. Yeah.
That's awesome.
We get in those rabbit holes. Sometimes they're good rabbit holes, and sometimes they're not helpful.
Yeah, you find out at the bottom, I think.
But then you're trapped in a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
How do you climb out?
Well, yeah. I think that's going to be a question at some point.
has there ever been a story that as you were getting into it, you were like, oh, this is actually too much, and I need to put it down and walk away? Have you ever walked away from a story?
There's a couple that come to mind. One, we early on said, oh, we should do Marilyn Monroe's story. And we started doing some research on that. And we were like, you know what? This is a really difficult and sad story. Like, there's not, we can't have fun with this. It doesn't fit our show because it's totally inappropriate to be funny about much of any of it. So that was one where we may one day tackle it, but I think so far we've decided it's not right for our show. And then Shah Hussein and Madhu Lal, we actually re-recorded that episode. It was like our third episode.
That's
so we
right.
Still
we talked
of,
about that. And
yeah.
How you kind of learned from the false start and kind of realized you were over-hedging
exactly.
a little bit.
Exactly. We were being so reverent and, you know, because this was a totally different culture than ours and we really wanted to be respectful and stuff. And I think we went a little too far, and it wasn't fun. Mm-hmm. It was a little too quiet and calm, and it didn't have a lot of energy.
Timeliney, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah,
like,
very.
They
just
were born.
Wrote,
they
the
went
facts.
To a thing. They did a stuff, and it was over. You know, and it was
I don't
like.
Don't want to say anything. You know?
Yeah. But, this isn't it.
we let's just empty our minds and just redo it without any like serious notes. We were just like, let's just have more fun with it, mm-hmm. have a good time with it, tell this story, keep the respect.
Right.
And it turned out great the second time. We hope it was much better. Mm-hmm.
That's a really good example.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we've walked away from
one. No, we also have a full disclosure. We have an amazing research assistant named Gabe mm-hmm. who helps us, you know, do kind of like bullet points and pull from different sources mm-hmm. and helps pick topics, you know, because Ben and I also do another show called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know that we do 5 days a week. We do 2 episodes of Ridiculous History every week, so it's nice to have a little bit of research help. But we, you know, dig in ourselves as well and contribute, and it's sort of a collaborative process. But I think there were a few that he pulled that we maybe never did because there was one that was about, like, some German folk tales around Christmas or something like that.
Right.
It was so, like, just grim and dark mm-hmm. and, like, kind of depressing. And
it was
like
a ring around the posy moment.
It really was. And it was like, I think we were just like, you know what, let's just give that one a miss.
Mm-hmm. I guess you're right. We did walk away from Jack the Ripper. Not to be too
smart.
Precious about it. There's a lot of excellent scholarship on this. It's probably one of the most well-documented serial murders in this era.
That's for a different show, though, isn't it?
It is for a different show.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, it's we didn't want to be precious about it, but it's kind of callous to be like, hey, these people's lives were horrible. They died in horrible ways. What do you do next? Waka, waka, waka? That's terrible,
right.
You know? And so we've, I think over time, me and this guy have developed sort of a spidey sense for that kind of thing, because, you know, you earn the trust, the rapport of, again, the most important part of the show, the person listening, and they're extending what I would argue is the most valuable currency of this time, which is time, right? Your personal time in a world of ubiquitous, never-ending information. Make it worth it. And if someone's trusting us to properly convey a story and to travel along with us for a few minutes, then we don't want to trick them. That's like hopping into an Uber to go down the street, and you're like, holy shit, why are we going to Montana?
Right. No, and to double back to, that's really totally true. Double back what we said earlier.
Pardon the French.
No, it's fine. You can speak French all you want. It is about that connection with the audience, and you could get these stories. We don't have like the monopoly on weird history stories.
No.
There's other podcasts that have done the same stories we've done. We have a sister podcast called Stuff You Miss in History Class. They're fantastic. We initially were like trying really hard not to cover anything that they'd covered, but then we realized like it's different. It doesn't matter. It is our perspective, and it's going. Even if someone enjoys that show, they could hear us doing the same episode topic, and it would be a completely different version of it. Even if like the facts were all true, it's like a different version of that story that could probably be valuable or at least entertaining in a different way or comforting in a different way, maybe.
No one owns a story.
No, you know? And that's what I'm saying. What we want to make sure we continue to do is approach everything we do with that empathy and connectedness with the audience so that people continue to hang out, you know?
Cool. Speaking of the audience, hi. We were wondering if y'all had any questions for us. There's a microphone that's going to be coming around. I'm sure you're used to this by now.
We're recording for virtual, so be clear, okay?
Yes, please.
Hi. That's loud.
Yeah.
Hello.
I did it at the beginning, too. Don't worry.
My name is Colleen, and my podcast is Not Almost There. It's not funny, but it's kind of like uplifting, motivational, inspirational. Yeah. And there's been a couple moments we had this guest and we like plan for it, do our research, everything like that. And this one guest whose father had passed away, which was a pivotal moment in his life, and he's done countless interviews about it, spoken about it, but on our podcast, he got really emotional. Mm. And it was like deer in the headlights, like, I don't know how to respond to this emotion right now. Mm. And like, it was a worse transition. Like on YouTube, we even got this comment that was like, good content, but oof, you missed that moment. Like right away, the audience like commented on it. So I don't know if you have any advice on, even in all your prep, like you get to a moment while you're recording that it gets like super emotional. Like how do you comfortably live in that emotional moment and then bring it out to, even if it's not humor, but it's like to a higher place?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can give an example not from this show at all. We all work on lots of different stuff, or Ben and I in particular, and Lauren, and I did a true crime show called Happy Face that was about the father. It was about the daughter of a infamous serial killer, and she got very emotional talking about finding out about her father being this rapist, murderer, you know, secret life kind of guy, and she cried a lot, and we had to walk the line of, like, are we doing service to her story by using these clips, or is it exploitive to her? And she's obviously part of this. She's an executive producer on the project, so she was very much open to whatever we wanted to do and had, like, cut if she wanted it gone. She was fine with whatever we wanted to use, but we had a, you know, I think, obligation to ourselves and to listeners to not overplay that hand and to only use it in a way that served the story and served the narrative and, like, the emotion of her, you know, revelation, kind of. So does that make sense? I think it's like just something you have to kind of like feel out in the moment, and it's certainly different for a conversational show than it might be for a heavy production lift type show.
I would say, Holly, in terms of nuts and bolts with those kinds of interviews, you are, as the interviewer, you are going to find yourself being the object of stability in this conversation about these things that have happened. So everything can change and be perfect and just so in post, in the editing room, right? But when you are with that person in that moment, one of the most important things is you shouldn't feel like you have to rush it. Silence can always be cut, right? And you shouldn't feel like, okay, we need to wrap it up, because often psychologically for people, when you're remembering something, you are experiencing it again,
right?
And so it's incredibly crucial, I would say, to first, if you know that kind of stuff is, if you're going to go into those waters, bake in for that interview at least 50% more time than you were planning. So if you're like, we're going to talk for an hour, be ready to go for an hour and a half or 2 hours. Make sure that you don't leave them in that moment. You know, and you can stay with them. It's totally fine to say, hey, do you want to take a break, right? And we'll come back in 10. But when you say, you know, we'll come back in 10, what you're really saying and what they're feeling, even if it's unconscious, is this person is not going to leave me alone. They're not going to run away from this. And then that, once you kind of unlock that and you build that level of trust, they are going to be super, super open to talk about other stuff, because they don't want to live in that moment necessarily, right? Either.
And you sort of help shepherd them through it, and then it does build trust.
And then the next thing you know, the conversation ends on like Police Academy 4 or something
the best,
like that.
Clearly the best Police Academy movie.
Rotten Tomatoes has spoken.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Amy Watson, and I have a podcast on PTSD that I started after the pandemic. And so my podcast is Wednesdays with Watson, and I started my first season autobiographical because I have lots of trauma, climbed in a closet and started telling my story, right? And I loved what you just said about not leaving the listener in a bad place, right? But you can imagine, like, I'm pretty funny in real life, but it's very difficult to be funny when you're talking, especially when I was telling my autobiography, which is lots and lots of trauma. Do you guys find just as valuable, and I think you hit it, and I'm sorry I can't read your name from here, but do you find it just, because I'm just, there's no way to really inject humor in a podcast about PTSD. There just isn't. I mean, there's some ways, but is it just as effective to just, what you just said, not leave them in a bad place? So, like, my second season is telling the stories of other people's trauma and the crooked roads of hope and pain and how they're not there anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And so we leave them with that, the hope, but the journey, the 20-minute journey there is not fun.
Sure.
And so one of the things I did, because to avoid what happened to her, is when people come on and tell their stories, because I'm also a writer, so I do a pre-interview, listen to their story,
that's a big
write
thing
it
to
so
do,
people
for sure.
can swallow it in small parts and in a little bit of creative way, and then interview them. So in your opinion, in the heart, which is why I came in here, is I want them to keep listening to the next story, because this is something people aren't talking about. Is that, in your opinion, just as effective as being funny? Because I can't be funny about this.
Well, you don't have to. I would I'm going to be fully transparent with you. I'm not really joking. Diana and Eli are, in my opinion, a little funnier than us. But I think all five of us could agree that. We're thinking in terms of palette, right? Like a color palette, and the what's worse than a lack of humor is forced humor. You know, right. Somebody's talking about like a time they lost someone in a house fire, and you know, if you have the temerity to try to force a joke in there, that's either monstrous or it's cartoonishly negligent. Mm-hmm. Like that is a missing piece. So I would say if humor feels forced, then that probably is that is a strong indicator that it doesn't belong in that part. Mm-hmm. And an audience feels that the way that animals can sense earthquakes before they happen. Like they will know. Podcast listeners are very intelligent.
For sure. What do y'all think?
Well, yeah, I mean we start, you know, making sure that we are in a story that we can be funny about to some degree. So it's a little outside our world, but I think, you know, we've done comedy for a long time together, and one major thing that we learned is that you know, you're walking your audience through it, and comedy is human and humane. Good comedy is, and you can be jarring and shocking and surprising without breaking that wall of being humane. And I think, like, we'll interrupt, you know, a lot of our heavy moments with a joke.
Yeah.
But we have to find a way to do that that doesn't negate that moment, that doesn't undo the importance and the heaviness of what we just talked about.
Right.
And I've cut jokes that didn't do that before. You know, we don't always nail it in the record, but when they're right, I think it really kind of helps your audience kind of walk away from that moment.
Yeah, I think some of my favorite like films and television shows do that too, where they break up like heavy stuff with like a little bit of levity. And I think that's, you need that. It's like a palate cleanser to kind of get you through to the next thing.
Yeah.
It's true. It does help you hang on to the end. You know what I mean? When you're talking about something so heavy and so real, and of course there's nothing to joke about, but it's hard to stay in that space for a really long time. So finding a way, even if it's not humorous, but I think you're thinking in the right direction of like finding a light moment, even if it's not a funny laugh out loud moment, just to like, okay, we breath, are good, yes, we did yes. that, and now we're back, and now we can go into the rest of it.
That's what I would say. I think you guys hit on it. So maybe a better way to think of this is that comedy or humor is a genre of connection,
yes.
right? It is not the only genre. So if there is some sort of connection, it is doing the work that comedy would have done.
Yes.
And all of these are equal.
Yeah.
And I hate to interject. We've been told by our experts over here, give a hand for them, please. They're doing the real work. That's Michael. That's Zach. That's Michelle in the back.
You're so good at names, Ben.
Proofs.
Yeah, we walked and rehearsed. Michelle, do we have time for one more question?
Do we have one more?
Okay.
You
well,
can do
it's
it.
It's all on Michelle now.
We believe in you.
Hello.
Hello.
Heather Parody, and I host a show called Happy Brain, not Happy
Ooh.
Face.
Yeah.
And we look at fun mental health hacks and tips, and we're about 100 episodes in. My background is mental health therapy, and so it's been kind of like beaten into me, like the reverence of mental health for good reason.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I also have like this other side to me that's like quirky and weird, like don't look me up on TikTok, like I do skits and I like that. So I'm really wanting to merge those two together, but also I'm just so afraid to really lean into that because it's such a heavy topic and it's so serious, but to the point of connection, I feel like that's the draw of comedy, is we can talk about this stuff. It's a little bit more lighthearted. So this next 100 episodes we do, I really want to lean more into the funny and make it more enjoyable, but I'm also just so scared of like saying the wrong thing or whatever. And I just wanted to know from your expertise, like approaching something like mental health, what is something that you would advise me as a creator to be considerate of or to think of, or mindset-wise or tactically, to do this well? But also make it fun too, because that's my heart.
I think you want to be obviously sensitive to anyone that might be going through these things while not being so oversensitive that you neuter the whole conversation, kind of, you know? I think some people, like, again, that's a great example you said about that one episode where you were so worried about getting it right or being sensitive to every possible angle. I don't think you always can. You have to kind of just go with your gut and be yourself and just kind of let the chips fall where they may. And, you know, obviously we're all thoughtful people and we're not going to try to say anything that's going to trigger or offend anybody. But I do sometimes think we could probably be a little easier on ourselves and not, you know, be so overly worried that we're going to say the wrong thing, because then you end up saying nothing at all.
Right. Yes, that's very true. And if your guiding star is, I respect this and I have appreciation for what's going on, what the struggle is, I think you won't punch down that way, because you kind of picked your hero, right? So you're like, I know whose side I'm on. So when I'm making fun, it's to help you get through this conversation, apply it to yourself in a way that's not scary. And like, we're here together. I mean, it's just like you make jokes at a funeral. Nobody's like, what a jerk. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's like, oh, thank God you said something to like relieve some tension. You know what I mean? And so it really, you can find a really, I think as long as you're thinking as you are thinking, which is I have a lot of respect for this topic, I think you won't go too far.
And the other thing, you taught me this years ago, is that not to be too afraid to slip up. And as long as you're open to learn, and that some things are, you know, no group of people is a monolith, right? So there's going to be different opinions about things, and you just have to keep listening and adapting, and hopefully you never get it wrong again, but you may, and that's okay, as long as, you know, what matters is what you do with that afterwards. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, right. Well said.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you to all of you for being here. Thank you to our staff.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll be hanging for a second after this. Unfortunately, we do have to wrap, because otherwise I owe Michael and Zach, like, all the beer. So have a wonderful time at Podcast Movement, everyone, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, that wasn't too bad. I feel like we didn't sound like idiots.
I feel like we sounded kind of smart.
Yeah, well, it was great. I mean, again, Lauren did such a great job moderating. Mm-hmm. Ben and Noel were both very kind to us, as they always are. It's ridiculous.
So complimentary.
I'm like, you guys, like, it's okay. We'll continue to be friends with you. You don't have to keep complimenting us.
Well, I think it's sincere, which is nice.
I know.
It's always better when you have a compliment that comes from a real place and not from a place of, like, I'm blowing smoke up your ass.
Well, yeah, and from people who we've learned so much from.
Right. And you know what they're talking about.
Yeah. I hope they see that too, that it's like they're partly responsible. Whatever success they feel like we have,
right,
like largely comes from them, you know, and especially, I mean, we've both been working with Ben creatively for the same 15 plus years. And I think we've all learned from each other, and Ben's just an awesome creative partner, and they're both great creative partners now. And I thought it was awesome doing this piece with them, and they were great handing stuff off and, you know, throwing answers to us and again, just saying wonderful things. We love them.
Yeah, they're the best. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I definitely had that thing where, you know, you think of a million things you wish you had said.
Of course.
After it, but...
Of course.
Whatever. As you said in the beginning, hopefully we get to do something like that again and be a little more prepared and kind of go, oh, I know where I tripped up last time, or how I could have said that a little more clearly, or whatever.
Right.
You know, that thing.
It was weird that you kept standing up and mooning the audience in the middle of, like, really serious questions.
I was trying to show how to bring the humor to the heavy.
Well, you know, that's one tactic.
It worked every time.
Yeah.
Is all I'm saying.
Except that lady that ran out crying.
Well, you know, you can't win them all.
Yeah.
Everyone's a critic.
That's true. Y'all should have been there. You could have seen this all. No, I thought it was great. And I would love to do the same exact panel again, you know, in a year's time or something.
It was something that I was like, oh, are people going to be interested in this? And they were, because it is, again, just something I take for granted, I guess, because we've worked in comedy for so long, how to crack a joke at the right time or find that rhythm of comedy. It comes kind of naturally now. And for a lot of people who don't do comedy, it doesn't. So it was kind of like, oh, no, there's people in here really do have, especially as you heard, there's like trauma podcasts and stuff asking about how to bring some levity to what, I mean, some very serious stuff.
Yeah.
And personal stuff. I mean, at least our stories were pretty removed from their lives and their circumstances. So we have a lot of distance that helps with comedy that is much harder to find when you're mired in your own tragedy, kind of. So anyway, it was really just really eye-opening about the various different, the whole convention was like that for me. It was sort of like, wow, the amount of different shows or shows with similar themes but such different formats, different ways of approaching a topic. It was just really fascinating.
Yeah, and the other thing, I think Ben and Noel mentioned this as well, but how nice was it to be up in front of a live audience again? Oh, I mean, you know, our background is theater, comedy and theater especially, like, is all about the audience connection. And man, do we miss that. And hopefully there's a dream, a wish and a prayer out there that we're going to take Ridiculous Romance one day on a live tour.
Ugh, it'd be so fun.
Ben and Noel have taken Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, their other show, on the road. And done a live tour with that. And I know that we've talked about maybe doing this show, and we think that'd be really awesome.
So fun.
Yeah. So reach out if that's something maybe you'd want to see in your city, because we love going anywhere but where we are.
That's
traveling
so true.
Is very big for us. So, hey, let's take the show to where you are. Send us an email.
That'd be fun.
Let us know what you think. You can hit us up at romance@iheartmedia.com.
Yep, or find us on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Dynamite Boom.
And I'm at, oh great, it's Eli.
And the show is at Ridic Romance. If you just want to follow the show and keep up with our weird memes that Eli makes about our episodes, they're definitely worth seeing.
Yeah. All right, so we hope to hear from you soon.
Yeah.
And we're going to catch you with another Ridiculous Romance next week.
Have a lovely weekend.
That's right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So long, friends. It's time to go. Thanks for listening to our show. Tell your friends, neighbors, uncles, and aunts to listen to our show, Ridiculous Romance.